on today's episode of the Next in Line podcast.
Let's say you have stock sitting, then you decide to lock your website. If I see that brand then and I like the piece, I want to buy it now. So why are you going to lock the website? Like, what's the point of gatekeeping? No disrespect to any other clothing brand. Knowing your brand's worth and knowing your brand's value, I'll stand by. So if someone says, oh, your price is too high, it's because you might not necessarily be my client market. You might not be my target market type thing. So let's keep it stepping. Every single person that's bought from a brand, not a single one said the quality is bad.
So I'm working 40 hours a week. I'm also trying to go to the gym, but I'm also trying to, you know, build something for myself. That moment in time, trenches.
What's the last time you cried?
Wait, that's a good question. The last time I cried, I said the break from uni. Because I couldn't hack it at that point. I was done.
Welcome to the Next in Line podcast, and I'm your host, Ephraim Nailoka. So a bit about me, I'm just turned 22 years old, got a law degree, but I decided to do something a bit different just because, you know, I feel like life was getting a bit boring, a bit repetitive. So I thought might as well just try something different to get myself out there a bit more as well. So this podcast is going to focus on three main topics: business, faith, and self-improvement. So I'll introduce the guest. So Midday.
Yeah, literally.
How you doing today, bro?
Can't complain. Good, chilling. Second time in Manchester, enjoying it so far. The weather's been nice and all of that. So loving it really and truly, and being on a podcast like this, loving it right now. So yeah. Can't complain.
Yeah, thank you for being my first guest. And I felt like Midday was the right person to actually film my first podcast. So do you remember actually how we first met?
Yeah, ProSocial. So it was a Google ProSocial networking event, and it was all about the digitalization of
the music industry.
Yeah. And I remember because I was trying to get into the music industry as a career, everything like that.
Oh, really?
Trying to delve deeper into that, funnily enough. And since then, I wouldn't like block it out completely because I love creativity and it's definitely part of who I am, music being a strong part of that as well. But like just learning about that, I love meeting new people. So it was like a perfect event that came up, and then I was like, why not?
Yeah.
And then I still have such a vivid memory of walking into the Google building, seeing Google on the front and everything like that.
It's mad, isn't
it? Walking in and like vlogging the whole thing, basically walking in, coming up the escalator. And yeah, that's when we met, and then that was a good day, man.
I think I saw it on TikTok, and you had to fill in like an application form. Had to put like your A-level results, what are you interested in, music, stuff like that. I think it was to do with more the internships as well. They had like a program to do with Google as well. And when I saw it, I was like, you know what? It's not often that you get invited to do that.
Exactly. So you may as well.
So I was like, might as well apply. And I wasn't actually going to go to the London event because at the time I was in my third year of university.
Yeah.
And it was expensive to like travel down to London all the time.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's the train tickets. Expensive.
If you even talk about them train tickets, I'm telling you, it's crazy.
Yeah, bro, I don't know how you do, you know.
Yeah, he knows. Yeah, he actually knows.
Yeah, you're something all else. Over the UK.
Somewhat. Every now and again, sometimes in Manchester, even though it's my second time, sometimes in Bram, sometimes in, a lot of the time it was between like Brighton and London, so Brighton for uni, and then London being back, well technically I don't live in London, but I live just outside London, near Watford, so like between Brighton and home basically, and then London, there's a lot of creativity, a lot of everything that I was trying to build and do was in London, creatively, so yeah, I was balancing, being in between the two places with a lot else.
So you're from Watford, just outside. So in third year specifically, I was always in and out between like Manchester, London. But I feel like London's where it's at. Like everything's in London. Like I feel like there's barely anything in Manchester. Like Manchester's calm, but
it's more of those.
Because it's smaller. The capital, isn't it? Like,
Makes sense.
But then anyway, so like last minute, I decided to go to the Google headquarters event. So I didn't want to go because I was like, you know what? I've got a dissertation I need to hand in. I can't be making these random like side quests. I've never like actually been outside as much as it was when I had my dissertation due. Like it was so unserious. Like I had a dissertation due and I was like going to every single last event. But then my boy was like, you know what? It's not every day you get invited to go to Google headquarters. Just go. So I remember went to Google headquarters. Went by myself as well, so I didn't know anybody there. Networking, kind of scary by yourself, isn't it? Like when you first go by yourself, different city, don't know anybody. So I was convinced though that I had to like force myself to like try to like meet new people, meet new friends.
Put yourself in that uncomfortable positions essentially, and make yourself comfortable by doing that more and more type.
So then remember like lining up in the queue, I was just like making some brief conversation. And then on like after the event actually, like when it actually started, because remember we were in that room just like talking to people, like seeing different people, and then we went into like a the main event room with like the hosts and stuff like that. We were in like groups in the tables. Do you remember? Like we
The school coming back to me now with that stage in the front. Different sections. Everything like tables, all of them different tasks that they had you doing. I remember that.
So I was sat with Ayonu. So I was with him. He was on my table. And then I think we took like a bit of a break, like a 15, 20 minute break. And then, cause I told him I was interested in starting a clothing brand. He said, let me introduce you. So he introduced me to
Ari.
So we were just talking about like fashion and stuff like that. So I started to get in conversation with him, talking about fashion, business, that kind of stuff. And then I think we were just on a random table and then like you came along. And then you had like this jumper. So it's from his brand. It's not released yet, is it? That jumper that you like
wore. Cream one that I wore.
No, it was black. So it was black with like the Vision Never.
A V&L emblem on it. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And then Midi was like, oh yeah, that's from my brand. And I was like, bro, that is hard.
Damn. That was hard. That's crazy.
So that's how like I first met Midday. And then we just started talking like briefly about, you know, like business and stuff like that. And to be fair, I was impressed. I was like, this guy knows what he's on. This guy knows exactly what he's doing.
That's me baffing it. That's what it is. Half the time I feel like I didn't know Jack what I was on with him. I was waffling my way through it, trying to get my way through it. I knew where I wanted to get it almost. So that was like what kept me going type thing with what I do, because in the moments of stuff, I was like, I'm winging it almost. Like it looks to other people outside, like it looks like I know I'm going, I know what I'm doing really and truly, but me in my head, I'm still figuring it out like step by step, but 100%.
I think after the Google headquarters event, Midday followed up with me afterwards, just like making sure I was calm and everything. But yeah, so that's how me and Midday met. But if you want to introduce yourself as well, just tell us a bit about what you do.
Alright, oh, I'm a owner of a premium streetwear clothing brand, Vision Never Lost, and it's all about basically not allowing anything to stop you from what you're achieving, having a vision set in mind, really and truly, which is God, essentially, and having faith that that vision that you started with and that goal that you started with, letting that really and truly let him, putting your trust in him and faith in him to bring that to fruition, essentially. It's essentially not a tale, but it's the story of my walk with God, essentially, my testimony with that. But I don't want it to be a brand where it's in your face, where it has to scream Christ, but it's in the designs of the clothing, it's in the premium feel of the clothing, it's in everything that we're doing, from the community to, that we're building, to the level of spec content that we're bringing out, to the innovative ideas and the different type of pieces that we want to come out with to make people think, like, look at that, and like they're like, oh, not necessarily, oh, it has to have a massive cross on it and necessarily scream that in your face, because I'm so big on not necessarily having to scream Christ, but it's just shown through your actions and what you do and who you are type thing, that being like one of the biggest things. So that's my main thing I do, I guess. I also recently got into styling as of October last year, more virtual, start with virtual styling, got into personal styling and everything like that from January onwards. What else? The community that I'm building is technically part of my clothing brand. So building a community of creatives, entrepreneurs from all different forums in all different industries, really and truly. For now, it's a lot of creators, from videographers to photographers to creative directors, stylists, models, other brand owners as well. Even got a couple people that have businesses in there as well. But just trying to continue building that. And then, uni as well.
Uni.
Still in my final year of a degree doing economics and management. And getting through that, 4 years deep into this degree now, 3 weeks left, but we're here on the pod enjoying life, and you know.
But that's the thing, like, I don't know how he balances it. I don't know how he does everything at the same time. Because I remember, like, when I was in third year, like, obviously I had, like, my side missions that I was going. I wasn't, like, running a business, running a community, and also, like, having, like, separate jobs on top of that, you know, like, your styling and stuff like that. I wasn't doing all that. But this guy, don't know how you do it, bro. But so I thought, obviously, for the introduction of the podcast, to kind of go back to childhood,
because
I think it's important to kind of talk about where you came from, background, how it's like shaped you to be the man you are today. So how was life like in Watford? Where were you born?
So born in Edgware or Barnet? It's one of the two, to be fair. I can't remember exactly. I'm pretty sure it's Barnet Hospital in Northwest London, because I used to live in Mill Hill. So Mill Hill's literally just on the outskirts. It's literally on the border of London, like Greater London, Northwest London. So I was living in Mill Hill from 2003 when I was born up till 2010. So I lived in Mill Hill, grew up in Mill Hill. Two sisters, so I got an older sister, younger sister, mum, dad. What was life like growing up?
Do you have any like vivid memories of like your childhood and stuff like that? Anything that kind of stands out? Were you like a naughty kid? Were you like a well-behaved kid? Like,
I would definitely say I wasn't well-behaved, to be fair.
You wasn't?
I was very loud. That's one thing. I was very loud and disruptive. Like, I remember, especially one memory I don't have, my mum always tells me, is every time, when I was especially like very, very young, every time I did something naughty, I just used to laugh my way out of it. So I'll smile at her, laugh, and then like bath my way out of it. But that's hilarious. Like, I couldn't even imagine myself low-key doing that. It just made me laugh when she told me that. And she still tells me that. She's like, you know, you can't laugh your way out of this problem instead of the other.
Yeah.
I was very like, I love making like noise. That's where I feel like the deep creativity stem from. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved noise in all forms. So I'd always be like, from beatboxing to clicking to just like whistling in classes, stuff like that. Like, a vivid memory that I've had since year seven was whistling in like the first science lesson. And then my teacher's like, who's whistling? I was like, it's the wind. So I got kicked out of the class. I was like 30 minutes into year seven or something like that.
Absolutely.
But I was always in trouble, just causing havoc almost. Like, one of them people was like a little bit of a class clown, always joking about. But then like slowly grew into myself. It was almost like character building, like looking back on it, especially when I looked back on it after I'd almost like not left that behind, because I realized there's a difference between like character and personality. And like, that's when I realized like, yes, making people laugh and all of that was like my personality, but it's also part of my character. Like, yes, I did it, but I think back then I did it almost more for other people's approval type thing, like wanting to fit in with the crowd, make everyone laugh for the sake of it.
No, I hear it. Literally. So what were the kind of main things about like going to high school in, was it Watford you went to high
school? So I went to St. Albans in Hertfordshire. Okay. So I moved to, what year does, so I started secondary in 2014.
Okay.
I moved to Hertfordshire, so where I live now, in 2010. So went to high school in a place called St. Albans, went to a school there, and that was character building, to be fair, definitely character building. Being in a predominantly white school and everything like that. But then obviously I had my people from back home, like went church and stuff like that. I like cousins and everything around me. But it's like, how to describe it? Secondary school was just, it was a lot of fun. A lot of the during a lot of it was just me having fun, like going through the motions, but a lot of it was like underperformance. Every time my dad was like, "Now you need to knuckle down the school, you need to get your head down, like actually lock in, stop playing around." It was like, I kept on, what's the word for it? I kept on saying, yeah, I will, and then postponed it and never really and truly did. So never like released or unlocked my potential that was there, because it's not like I'm not going to like gas myself up and say like I'm a genius, but it's not like I'm dumb. I'm still smart and everything like that. So it's one of them ones where I could have tried harder, but my mind was just focused on other things. Like, but secondary school, I explored a lot. Like music, I explored. I used to actually produce music, make music. What else? I played drums. Used it as an opportunity. Taught myself the piano a little bit. So I used to go on YouTube, search up them tutorials. Taught myself.
Till this day. I did that, by the way.
And then music's been like a massive thing. I always love music, to be fair. So even now, like over the years, I've always listened to all different types of music. From year seven, I was in a band. Me and two guys in my class, in my form, we formed a band. And like every lunchtime, I used to go to the music room. One of them was on the guitar. The other one sang, sort of. And I played the drums. And then we all used to just jam out together, stuff like that. like music and every being in like the orchestra, the different concert band, percussion ensemble, all of that was like a very vivid memory of me from secondary school.
Yeah, because I feel like that's like your typical kind of like experience in high school, like, you know, you're a bit naughty, like you want to follow the crowd and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, I wanted to touch on you going to a predominantly white school. So I went to school in Stratford, Little Manchester, and it was predominantly Asian.
Wait, you say Stratford?
Stratford.
Oh, Stratford, wow. Stratford, I was thinking Stratford, London. I was like, there's Stratford in Manchester.
No, but I went to Stratford High School, predominantly Asian. Okay. I feel like white people were like the minority, if anything. Mm-hmm. So I feel like when it comes to my experience, if we're going based off like stereotypes and stuff like that, Asian people, like, and their kind of culture background, it's very like school heavy, like they keep on like pushing
education
yeah, is like the main focus. So I feel like with me, I was always surrounded by smart people that wanted to do well. My parents didn't have to tell me to, you know, like, come on, like, get your grades in, like, intact, because all I was surrounded by was people who were actually trying to
better themselves. Your environment almost like cultivated that within you.
Yeah, so I was always like naturally, I'd say like academically inclined, and like my parents' evenings and stuff were like calm, like it was fine. But I find it weird because my brothers, they go to the same high school as I went to, but they're having like issues, like they're so unserious. I don't know if it's just like with my siblings or if it's a generation thing, but this generation of like TikTokers and stuff like that, so unserious. Like they're so, that they'd rather like go on TikTok for a few hours and spend those few hours revising. They'd rather like, you know, like do
short attention span,
like stuff like that. So yeah, so what I wanted to touch on was you going to predominantly white school. And so did you ever feel a bit isolated? Were there any kind of experiences that stood out to you, or was it just kind of like normal?
Smooth sailing thing. Well, were there any, like, looking back on it, I'm grateful that I went to that school, to be fair. Everyone says, oh, like there's pros and cons of it, everything like that. I'm definitely grateful that I went to the school because it taught me skills. Till now, there's certain stuff I wish I properly like used later on, because especially I went to a private school as well. So going to a private school and then you're chilling with all of these people, this, that and the other, that all end up going to Russell Group unis, doing all of these different crazy things whilst you're in high school, and you don't actually realize like what they're doing behind the scenes, what their parents work as, this, that and the other. And a lot of the reason that I've heard like people send their kids private school is for like the networking aspect, like who they can meet type thing. But I wish I did that. Really, I was just on vibes, really, truly. Yeah. I speak to like maybe three people every now and again from my secondary school. Like there's three guys, like Kelechi, Devon, and there's one other guy, like Matthew. There's a guy called Matthew, and he was in the band actually. Matthew was one of the guys in the band. Devon was in my drama class, and then Kelechi was just one of them guys in my class from time, and then our dads were friends and stuff like that. But what was the experience like? I feel like it's given me not values, what's the word for it? Not structures. It's given me the ability to chat to anyone.
Yeah.
I feel like from that, I know how to, not how people say code switch and stuff like that, but I've been there, done that. So how certain people can go just be completely baffed. Like they won't understand anything that's going on. Like I can, it's made me like, what's the word? Intransitive, and I can switch in and out and not blend in with different people, but it helped, especially being there from the age of what, you start secondary school at like 11?
11, yeah.
11. Being there from that age. And then it's one of the things where you don't actually realize it's being ingrained into you, but it's just building that skill in, like, I could talk to anyone from there. Because I would say I wasn't naturally a shy person, but funnily enough, for the first few years of secondary, I was mad self-conscious. Like, everything I did, even though I was doing foolishness, I was, like, mad worried of what people thought of me. But shout out my, like, one of my best mates, Ben, and we don't speak often, but he'll always be, like, one of my close mates and stuff like that. He's the one who, like, taught me along the way, like, just stop caring what people think, like really and truly it does not matter.
Yeah.
Because how is what they're doing gonna affect the lane that you're in? And like them same people, it's cliche that someone says, oh, there are people that pray their downfall, that hate on you, they'll be laughing 10 years later down the line. It was the other month that not someone like that, but one of them people that used to try to fit in the crowd and do that back in secondary, he texted me on Insta popped up to my story something about my brand, and he was like, "Midday, like, I rate what you do, like, keep it up." He was like, "From who you were back in primary, because we went same primary, same secondary, and he's seen me grow like all of these years, and literally was down the road from me." He was like, "You've genuinely come a long way, like, props to you," type thing. And it's, it was like, it's not one of them things that I needed to hear, but I was like, it's nice to hear, like, someone else can almost see that, and like having them people that go along the journey with you, even if they're not necessarily like the closest proximity, they've still seen where you started from and like where you're going, type thing. So like, it was definitely taught me to mature a lot, everything like that. Even though in secondary experience, like racism stuff like that, I experienced like racism like once or twice, and that was a hard thing, but by the grace of God, we kept it stepping, and it really molded me into a better man now. So
So what you said actually about code switching, I've started to realize that more now that I'm working like a 9-to-5 job. I've never had to code switch as much as I like, but sometimes though, I feel like in my personal experience, because I went to like a predominantly Asian high school, I actually felt like that kind of, like, I wasn't surrounded by a lot of black people. So, you know, even when I went to Google headquarters I was with you lot, they were speaking that London slang. I actually couldn't understand half of what they were saying, because they were like, "Oh yeah, this is Gara, this is Gara, this is Gara." And I was what does that even mean? Like, because I wasn't surrounded by that. I just feel like that's why it's important to have schools with like a diverse set of people. Like, you know, you have like different people from different cultures, different races, different backgrounds and stuff. So in the real world, you can actually like adapt.
And someone else told me this, I think it was a guy called Ty. I can't remember what he does. I have him on LinkedIn or something like that. We met at a networking event, and he was telling me, he like, even on LinkedIn, he brings his authentic self. Like, he doesn't have to code switch, because once you really and truly understand who you are, and you understand your brand, so you, like, you understand your personal brand and what you're bringing to the table, regardless, code switching doesn't necessarily need to. Yes, there's a time and a place to act one way and act a certain way, but really and truly, you bringing your authentic self never switches. Like, that's one thing that I've learned. Like, I'm not going to switch my authenticity or who I am for anyone, no matter where I am, really and truly. But the way I might speak more toned down, more relaxed, is different to how I was speaking, like, let's say, a board meeting in the Shard or somewhere like that. Like, knowing the time and the place, rather than necessarily code switching and having to make myself seem a type of way to fit in and to marry a certain demographic or certain characteristics that a company is, let's say, looking for in a job interview. It's one of them ones.
Yeah, because I think when I first started this job, so I graduated the end of July, and then the week after I started my first proper job. So I didn't know what to expect. I have worked like a full-time job before, like, but it was temporary though. It's temporary, like in the summer.
Okay.
I worked for AQA, the exam board.
Oh yeah.
Just as like an administrator. But this was my first ever like 9-to-5 job. I worked there, and it's like a majority like white area. So when I first started, I thought I had to be like, I had to speak a certain way, I had to present myself a certain way. But I almost did myself a disservice, because I presented myself to be like too put together.
People can like read through that really and truly.
Do you know what I mean? I was, because I thought when you go to like a 9-to-5 job, I thought you have to speak a certain way, otherwise you might, you know, get some looks and stuff like that. So when I first started, I was literally speaking like, you know, I was not posh, but you know, I am well spoken, but you know, like that level of like well spoken. And then eventually, like, people were like, you know, you don't need to do all that. You don't need to like sound a certain way. But like, we're from Mane, like, you know, we're from Mane. Like, you don't need to like, don't need to do all that. Do you know what I mean? But I felt like I had to do that, otherwise I just wouldn't fit in with the people. And in a 9-to-5 workplace, because you're with those people 24/7, like, I see them more than I see my actual family. You think about it, because if you, when you go to work, you go to work at like 8 a.m. I finish work at like 6 p.m. sometimes, or 5 p.m. And then I might go to the gym, or I might go out, and then I'll come home, and then by the time I get home, I want to sleep. More recently, like you say, like, I think you can be your authentic self. You don't have to like switch all the time for people.
Yeah,
I do agree that there's a time and a place for everything, because if you're meeting like the queen, or, well, not the queen anymore, but if you're meeting the king, you're not exactly going to be like, "Oh, yo, why, bro? Like, what are you telling me? Like, good bro, like, no, you know what I mean? Like, there's a time and a place."
Yeah.
But yeah, so I do agree, like, with you. You shouldn't change yourself for anybody, but there
100%.
are some circumstances where you have to, tone it down a bit. But yeah, that's my opinion on that. I wanted to talk to you a bit more about styling. So this guy also has a TikTok.
Something like
Also has a
that.
TikTok where he puts a few fits together on his Instagram stories as well. He's always like recording himself, with like the different fits and stuff like that.
Deep.
But I realized with you don't have like a set like niche or set dress sense.
Oh, that's a good one,
Because sometimes you dress a bit more like Y2K, then sometimes you might go like straight streetwear. Like you are like today's
Yeah,
like a bit more
today.
like straight streetwear.
Shooter,
So how would you define your style, and also how did you actually get into like styling and stuff like that?
that's a fantastic question. Oh, how would I define my style? My style is just my style, you know.
Just your
Well, I
style.
realize recently, especially recently, I'm trying to get more into like old money. I love that old money aesthetic. Funnily enough, a shoot that my first ever styling shoot that I just did. I'm trying to build up my portfolio. Did a test shoot, and that was the whole theme. It's called Worn But Worthy. How of Shout out to ChatGPT for helping me come up with the name as well. But it was that whole old money type of theme. Like it's like a corporate, but bringing it back, like a vintage type corporate feel. But it's also comfy as well. Like I love the color palettes of it. There's like three color palettes I realize I love. I love neutrals, so I love like today how I'm like rocking out all cream almost. I love creams, I love
The
browns,
same.
like creams, browns, those new tones essentially. Those are like very strong color palettes that resonate with me, and I just like, and they work well with my skin, I guess, and everything like that. So I've learned, and people told me, "Oh yeah, cream actually works." This and the other side, I said, "You know what? Let me just ride it out and keep going with it," type thing. So how would I describe my style?
Your style.
My style is my style. Like my steez is my steez type ones. Like one day I can feel like today just a straight streetwear, but I feel like my comfortable style is now becoming pleated trousers, loafers, even though I've got two pairs of loafers and both of them kill my feet. Like the other day, can't remember where I was, wore my loafers from 7 a.m. in the morning and didn't get home till like 1 a.m. at night, and my loafers were doing me. I was so annoyed that I didn't bring a spare change of shoes. But anyway, that's another story. But like yeah, like a shirt, a nice shirt. I'm loving Oxford shirts. So even if it's an open collar Oxford shirt where I open the button up, pleated trousers, a nice pair of loafers, and like a calm jacket, whether that be one of my favorite brands, shout out Cole Buxton. Cole Buxton jacket's tough. Shout out Carhartt. I've just got a Carhartt like camo jacket. But yeah, I feel like that's my comfortable style. But I'd say I never do like the typical, yeah, I can do straight leg tracksuits. Don't get twisted. Even my brand's got straight leg tracksuits and stuff like that I'm working on stuff like that, continuing to innovate and see where that takes me and everything like that. But I'll never rock like I've never been like a guy that I've never owned a tech fleece in my life.
Never.
I've never owned an all white pair of Air Forces in my life. Never
Never.
owned an all black pair of Air Forces in my life.
What?
It's mad. The only Air Force I owned before I gave them to my boy were Roper Air Forces. So I got white Air Forces, got my boy to customize them, and then wore them. I wore them, I think, three, four times. Or, yeah, three, four times.
Because I'm not gonna lie, I thought at first you might have been the guy to actually rock tech fleeces with like the Air Force, and then maybe
Never
had like a
my.
revelation to kind of like switch up your style and stuff like that.
That's jokes. Nah, not even to be fair. Never rocked a tech, and I'm so glad I've never rocked a tech. I always found, even when I started shopping for myself, I started working in 2021. That's the first time I ever got a job, and then since then, well, ever got a job, but since like used to sell sweets on school stuff like that, I didn't class it as a job really and truly. But yeah, it was from then onwards. I would just find like other tracksuits that I could find like cheap on sale. I'll get like a random pair of joggers. So I got like a Couture Club tracksuit when they did a sale for £40. Grabbed a Manier Devoir tracksuit, like two Manier Devoir tracksuits for £40.
That's good.
Now you won't even find a hoodie for a third of the price. So Manier Devoir stocks flown. But yeah, shout out them. What else? Yeah, never been a that type of one. And then you said, how did I get into
How'd you
styling?
get into styling?
That is a fantastic question. I liked fashion. I definitely liked fashion. I've always been into shoes, like from young, like ICT lessons in secondary school. Instead of doing touch typing, and my mom made me resit touch typing courses in my own time because she knew I'd never did them and I failed, and my teacher contacted her and all of that. But I used to go on StockX, StockX and go search up. I remember the pair I searched up was like Jordan 25s, Jordan 30s, and there's these called basketball shoes. And they had band on the bottom in red. These black shoes is like a black red gradient. And I was like, yeah, these are crazy. I have such a vivid image of them in my head. They're in my camera all the time. Then there's these Jordan Horizons that I loved. And it was always shoes. They're like sick form, even though I couldn't dress in sick form. But that was like the early days of me like low key getting into putting fits together. Then, yeah, going to uni, said started dressing nicer, coordinating colors, learning how to put fits together, and then coming to launching a brand and everything. I can't just have a brand and not know how to dress myself. Make sense. So I built up my closet somewhat, started shopping at different brands, like minimal, different brands like that. And then took it from there. Styling, I like creating virtual styling inspos.
Okay.
I saw Benirclo doing it for their clothing brand to help like their clients and help their audience like with different ways how to style their piece. So I started doing it for Vision Never Lost. Took it from there. Then my friend, I took over his social media for his personal shopping business. Started doing all of the virtual styling for his page and managing his social media, and then started like actually wanting to style other people. So I just said to a couple friends, oh, can I style you for like this event? Helped style one of my friends for her, not birthday dinner, for her thing. And now like it's a constant thing. Like even this morning she texted me saying she's got a gala coming up. Can I help style her for this? And then, yeah, I said, you know what? I actually want to pursue this. And then props to, he's been killing it in the styling game that I was actually looking at. Elle's, looks by Elle's, she's been doing her thing. Elsie's been doing her thing in the styling game. Shout out Mel's, Mel's Attire, Cold. He's a smaller stylist, but has been mashing work. Shout out Loretto as well. She's been doing her thing on this. And like seeing these different stylists, I was like, I'm loving the way they're doing it and bringing their perspective. Like I saw styling as just bringing my perspective of fashion. And like helping someone else dress nice, like the way that they, like, but bringing them a comfortable style. Because I feel like styling, one thing I realized, is all about one, proportions, like knowing someone's body, like what someone who's 40 will not wear like something mad graphic unless, who knows what they're in. You know, shout out to people that are 40. And like the mad graphic prints and all of that. But someone that's 40 will not dress like someone who's 17 who would be wearing like Trapstar or Hellstar or something like that.
But also I think, like you mentioned as well, you need to know the person's body.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, because 100. Something that
Midi
might wear that looks good on him, when I try it on me, nah,
could be completely different.
Something I might be able to wear might look completely awful on you. You need to know the person's size, the person's body. But I also feel like that's my issue with like online shopping as well, because you look at like the models and you think, yeah, that looks hard on them, try it on,
how would it look on you type thing. Like a lot of brands are now trying to cater to a lot more like wider audiences, like let's say the likes of like bigger brands out there, like the Boohoo Mans, the Zara, stuff like that, and ASOS, where we saw that whole shift, I want to say, getting close to 2020 almost, 2015 to 2020, you saw that whole, there would be pressure being applied for them to do like the plus size ranges, the tall and slim, and even in the women's, they do like the petite, the plus size, the what's the thing, wide and tall? I don't even know what the categories are at this point, to be fair. But yeah, all of the different things, you know, and yeah, it's a massive thing. Like even with the models that they're choosing now, because they want, you want your consumer to feel good in the way that when they look at someone wearing the clothes, they want to also imagine them and envision them being that same person modeling the clothes and wearing it. So you want, it's all like psychological and stuff like that.
No, I agree with that, because I watched I think two separate documentaries. One of them being, I don't know if you watched it, but it's to do with the brand Abercrombie and Fitch. So they did a documentary on Netflix, and it was basically showing like the rise and the fall of Abercrombie and Fitch. So basically, if for those who don't know, Abercrombie and Fitch, I think it's an American brand, and at first their marketing was basically getting the the fittest, most attractive models, basically like half naked. And then like people would try to aspire to be like those models and stuff like that. So it created like, I think their marketing technique was more like aspirational, like they wanted to be aspirational. So if you didn't look like, you know, like 6'4", six pack, or if the women didn't look like Victoria's Secret supermodels, then you weren't a part of it. Like it was only for the hot people at the time in it.
Essentially,
And then obviously they started to, you know, become less and less successful. Not simply because they became a bit more inclusive, but they lost that kind of, what's the word?
Status, kind of that status, high status that, quo that associated with it almost.
Because it was only seen as like so aspirational, but then once it started to be a bit open to everybody, that's where things started to kind of like sink down. And potentially it's the same with Victoria's Secret as well. Victoria's Secret used to also be very, very aspirational, a certain type of look, a certain type of woman.
But
then they started to include like, you know, plus size, different shapes and sizes. And now it's kind of lost that kind of like same aspirational feeling. So yeah, I feel like it's a bit tricky because a good marketing technique is the aspirational side, but as well you want to include everybody because you want to see yourself reflected in everybody as well. So do you believe that, you know, with like, because I know Vision Never Lost is more of a Christian based woman brand, but if you were to create a more, I don't know if you class secular, but like a standard clothing brand that wasn't Christian, would you still, would you use that kind of aspirational marketing technique, or would you still kind of open it to, if you're designing for men and women as well, would you allow it to be open for everybody, inclusivity, or would you make it a bit more like exclusive? And I feel like Cortez now, they're doing more well, they used to be a bit more exclusive when it comes to like their drops and stuff, like with the passwords and stuff like that. Would you have done that, or would you have, you know what I'm trying to say?
I know, I'm just thinking about it really and truly would I make it more exclusive? My brand's inclusive for anyone who wants to get involved can get involved type thing. Like it's for everyone. I don't want it just to be for a certain type of people, for a specific type of people. Models wise, it's still stuff that I'm learning. Like I'm a year deep in doing the brand thing, a year and 3 months, but there's so much I've still yet to, there's so much I've learned. There's a decent amount I've learned, but there's so much I'm yet to learn type thing. So with the exclusivity, the password drops, everything like that, at the start, I was like, that's what I'm going to go for, everything like that. Build up the hype, everything like that. Marketing. But this, at the end of the day, where I see myself positioning myself as a brand, like I don't want someone to have, someone told me, but let's say you have stock sitting, then you decide to lock your website. I want to be able, if I see that brand then and I like the piece, I want to buy it now, so why are you going to lock the website? Like what's the point of gatekeeping? No disrespect to any other clothing brand,
no disrespect, Clint,
you're one of, you're probably the marketing goal at this point.
Shout out to
like
Clint.
What you're doing is, I was watching the documentary of Clint actually talking about, not documentary, it was like a interview video, him talking all about his journey from like how he started in like a small in a basement and scaled up to an office, and now he's got his like whole distribution center and everything like that, and learning about his mindset throughout the whole thing. How he views Cortez to compare to how other people view Cortez is mad, because he feels like he hasn't even touched the surface. Like, I saw a tweet where he reposted a tweet saying, do you think Cortez is the biggest streetwear brand in London? He said, no, we're the biggest streetwear brand in Europe. I said, you know what, shout out to them, because to be fair, they've cleared London. I don't think anyone in London can touch what they've done and have the success rate that they've done. Because every time everyone said Cortez is going to fall off, they've never once fallen off, to just brought it back harder type thing. But it, that was a little bit of a tangent. But
No. Perfect, bro. Perfect.
Back to exclusivity, inclusivity. I'm all about inclusivity, being accessible to all. And whether that's portrayed through the models, even though I wouldn't say I'd use a specific type of model really in a specific demographic or range of models so far, even though my brand page will say otherwise, you'll see like a very specific type of model. It's just people that I know that model, and I was just like, I want to put them on. So like, as I'm growing the brand, I want to grow with people around me type thing, having different people, whether it's my people doing videography, creative directors, whether it's photographers, models, stuff like that, like people in my ecosystem, everything. That's what I'm all about, like in-house. RVs in-house, then go out and find like someone random, like work with people that you already have them relationships with. Mm. It's so much easier because you can already bounce off each other. You guys know each other, how each other think. But yeah, like I don't want to gatekeep my brand. My brand will be premium. It's one of them ones where knowing your brand's worth and knowing your brand's value, I'll stand by. So if someone says, oh, your prices are too high, mm-hmm. it's because you might not necessarily be my client market. You might not be my target market type thing. So let's keep it stepping.
Can't afford them.
One of them ones. Can't afford like, them. If you feel everything, every single person, no lie, that's bought from my brand, and I'm going to gas myself up a little. Every single person that's bought from a brand, not a single one said the quality is bad. Not a single one. And even the samples that I wear, I've had people say, yeah, the sample quality is good and stuff like that. So you have to pay for the premium quality type thing.
All good points, to be fair. I think I agree with everything you said, to be fair. I think it's spot on. I think with the exclusivity thing, like you said, initially it was cool. You know, when Cortez did it, then everybody kind of started to follow Cortez and what they were doing. Mm-hmm. But I think initially it was cool. But then when everybody started to do it, I was like, I don't even want it's the
too much.
Yeah. Like passwords on everything. I get it's a marketing technique that obviously Clint mastered and he's done well in that. But I feel like now I can't be bothered.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
wait and sign up to this emailing list.
Nah, I just
6 PM.
Nah.
What's that? GBP not GBP time. Some next times I'll wait in 6-7 PM. For some crazy stuff to drop.
Because sometimes, like, especially when you're online, you have a very short attention span. So if something captures your attention, I want to buy it there and there.
Yeah, literally.
Don't make me sign up, put my details in, and then you're going to send me a password at this time. Just keep the website open. Yeah. If it's in stock, let me buy it. If it's
new
not in
collection,
stock,
just let them know.
Do you know what I mean? Like, this whole extra, like, password, email, I'm not interested no more.
Brush.
Yeah. But let's move on to just speaking about the fashion industry in general.
Mm.
So I'm sure you've networked with a couple like brand owners and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Have you done a pop-up yet for Vision Everlast?
We've done Manchester. We did the Manchester one 1st of March. We did one at church, to be fair, funnily enough.
Was that the one when you came to Manchester?
Like, that was the Manchester one, but I did one. Yeah, that one. But then I did one at my church back home. Okay. And they had like a business fair. I think those are the only two pop-ups I've done, to be fair. What's it, 2025 April?
May.
March, February. February. Yeah, I think those are only two pop-ups that I've done. But it's because I feel like when I started, I've been invited to do pop-ups at a couple other places and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I didn't see the value in doing them that early on, because I didn't even see, I feel like if I did them, there would have been no structure with it and I wouldn't even have been able to do it well. So I was like, if I'm going to deliver something like that, let me deliver it on a proper scale. And even though everyone says you have to start somewhere, start with nothing, like we're starting somewhere type thing, we're building a community, like actually having engagement chats in our community, stuff like that. And then we're starting from there, like from the ground up, like everyone who's been from the start there, from the time before we even launched a brand in this like seed stages, like the stages where the brand was yet to even come into fruition and start, like we're bringing people on the journey type thing. And like along the journey, it's mad, like even me reflecting on it, seeing I didn't do all of this personal brand stuff, like all of my fashion content and different content I'd be posting on my socials when I was starting, really and truly. So like it just started with, it was mainly the brand. Now incorporated my personal brand with it. And now I'm, even though everyone says it's technical and it's tough sometimes to grow the two alongside each other, I'm going to find a way to incorporate my brand with my personal brand. Because really and truly, people that are like Clint, everyone's buying into Clint as well as Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
So why not bring my personality and show my authentic self to the masses, you know?
No, I like that you said that. Because I went to a streetwear pop-up.
And DP something, yeah, I know the one you're talking about. Yeah.
So I went to that one, and because I was like, you know what, it's in Manchester, it's local, and I think the tickets were, I don't know if they were free or if you had to pay like less than a tenner or something.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, let me go to the actual, you know, pop-up store. So I went there, went round a few stores, and I think like I actually learned a lot when I went to that store, because like I'm a very observant person. Like I can, I'm a very good, I don't know if it's a good judge of character, yeah, but I can clock things like very, very like
Yeah, very
small things,
observant
very
person.
observant kind of person. So if I went to a brand and they had all their clothes on like display, sometimes I wouldn't buy from them because of the person that was selling it, because I didn't like the person. The clothes were nice, but the person who was selling the clothes to me, like the owner, I was like, I don't like, you're
Yeah,
not,
massively.
you know what I mean? So like I think there was this one person I came up to, like no hi, no anything, no hi, you okay, like nothing. It was
Yeah,
just like,
straight to vision.
just kind of looked at me like with a blank stare, like I'm not even interested, because I'm paying
Yeah,
you money for your clothes, but I don't even like you, so I don't
what's the point
want
of you don't want to invest into it?
to into somebody who that you don't like. If I and there was a brand called the Guizmon, shout out to the Guizmon, and the
Oh,
guy
they are
who,
hard. I know exactly. I know that I've forgotten the owner's name, but I
Seb
met him.
Sebastian, yeah.
I met him at the London, like similar pop-up that they did in London, but yeah.
So it's Sebastian, and I don't know if it was the co-founder as well. But Sebastian, he was a very like, I feel like he's good at sales. Like he kind of like taught you through the brand, and he was actually like, you know,
Yeah.
discussing like, you know, about the brand, about the quality, fabrics and stuff like that. And I bought the zip-up hoodie. Have you seen the blue zip-up hoodie,
Yeah,
that reversible
the
one?
one inside out embroidery, distressed embroidery. I know what you're talking about.
So I thought that was hard, like that zip-up
That was
hoodie.
cold.
But what sold it to me was Sebastian, because I was like, I rate this guy. I actually rate this guy, and like he took time to like, you know, like go over stuff with me. He was like, oh, by the way, I need to let you know this, I need to let you know that. So I was like, I want to buy this brand because I want to support you. Do you know what I mean? Like I like it, I think it's hard as well, but I support you.
What's putting your brand in that place amongst a market with millions of brands? Every day there's a new brand,
Bro.
trap something coming out.
Game
Go get a grind sort of sign. There's always
changer
something new. Yeah,
limited. Go
literally.
get money. Like,
Something new coming up.
and I think, with all honesty, yeah, some clothing brands, like I feel like a lot of the reason why they're not getting sales is because, first of all, the crap quality, crap marketing, and they all look
The
the
same.
same. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, don't like be like, I get that there's nothing new under the sun. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's some gonna be something somewhere that's similar to your idea. Cool.
But he's breaking the boundaries and
Do you know what I mean? I feel like it's the same stuff over, and everybody's copying Trapstar. Everybody wants to copy Cortez. Everybody is trying to copy like all these like different brands, and it's like none of you guys stand out. You look like cousins. You look like siblings.
That's the thing.
Like nobody stands out.
So much I'm realizing is like marketing as well. Like there's not necessarily like mad quality behind the goods. There's no special design. You're not really and truly changing the what's the word of like the structure of an item. I can't remember the word of it. It's just left my mind. Like but yeah, I can't lie. It's
It's
just left
gone,
my mind.
it's gone.
But what's the word? You're not breaking any boundaries. You're just doing the same type stuff, the same fonts. Maybe a sleek twi oh my gosh, a slight tweak
English.
in the, yeah, English is not English, and a slight tweak in the font, and you change the brand name and stuff like that. But the way people market it will make it look mad. But they'll somehow have this community somewhere and this community somewhere really and truly. There'll be certain brands that are smaller that will stay small, but they'll still sell out every single drop and mash work with their sales and different marketing and everything like that. But there'll obviously be bigger brands. Not all brands want to scale to a Cortez level, to a Manny, a Tavoir level, to all of these streetwear brands that start smaller and that have grown. Like even Manny Tavoir, that used to be like a street, not streetwear brand, but they were like on the premium side of streetwear, seen as more elegant side of like, it's like a more elegant Cortez, one could say. And now they've got like high fashion and they've done their thing. So shout out to Reese Wabara from Manny Devoir, but it's like knowing your pocket and then staying in that lane and just holding in on it. Like what you have your eyes set on, locking and don't let anyone, that's vision never lost for real.
Because I do think that like marketing obviously plays a key role, and some people are very, very creative with their marketing, and by marketing alone it can make a basic standard t-shirt that's that you're
Like an
charging 90
essentials
quid
collection,
essentials collection, or like Represent, for example.
yeah.
Represent there's nothing like, I've been to like the Represent store in Manchester. Have you been to it?
Yeah, went yesterday.
Yeah. So I feel like what people buy into with Represent is the message behind it. Do you know what I mean? It's the message, it's the community, it's the culture behind it. The clothes itself, like a standard like Represent t-shirt, I don't know how much they cost. I don't know if it's like 80 quid, 70
yeah,
quid.
Yeah, something like
but
that.
It's like a plain t-shirt.
Represent. London 247.
It's nothing innovative. It's nothing fancy, nothing special. But the marketing and the meaning behind the brand is what gives it its value. Mm-hmm. And I think what a lot of people are doing, they are then going to try to replicate what Represent are doing, just like simple, basic tees, but not have any message behind it, not have any like personal branding behind it, not marketing it properly or marketing it, you know, in a smart, strategic way. And then they're surprised when they get like no sales or no customers and all, because you're trying to copy, but you're not doing it in the right way.
Do you think brands in 2025 then can exist and go on successfully without their owner having a personal branding that people are aware of?
I think it's easier if you have a personal brand, because even with Broken Planet Market, for example, like the two owners,
Lucas and Lucas.
Like I think those, like they are their brand, they are their target 100%, audience. Yeah. So it's like, because you know they actually rock with what they're wearing,
they are,
you buy into
automatically.
But then as well, I think like brands that you like as well, like Cole Buxton or even like Supreme or even like Clint's, for example, I don't know the owners, but I know the clothes are hard. So I think you can create a successful clothing brand without a personal brand, but I think it helps if you do have a personal brand, especially because like with TikTok and stuff like that, if one video on TikTok blows up because of your marketing kind of technique, you don't need to be the face of the brand.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean? You just need to create good content. And I get the fashion industry is very like oversaturated and stuff like that, but I get why people say that, but I don't think it's an excuse to not start work, because Broken Planet Market, Cortez, they all started like a couple of years ago, and the fashion industry was still oversaturated then.
So true.
Do you know what I mean? So if, you know, I wanted to start a clothing brand, I'm not going to say it's so oversaturated, so I'm not going to start one. Who's to say that God can't make you stand out in front of all those crowd of people? Because if there's a certain, if your brand, if God plans for your brand to,
if he's called you to
be successful, that nothing like it, you know, God don't care about how oversaturated it is. Don't care about who's running the streetwear brand at the moment. Doesn't care about anything like that. If you're supposed to be there, you're supposed to be there. I'm going to go into some segments.
Okay.
Some segments of the podcast. So I have a segment that I want to call Withholding Nothing. So Withholding Nothing, so it came from one of my favorite gospel songs,
William McDowell. As soon as I heard it, I was like damn, that's the title of that song.
Because that, I no joke, I play that song every single day. Withholding Nothing by William McDowell, like
proper.
Yes. Especially I listen to like the live medley version as well.
Oh yeah.
Bro, that song by far like one of my favorite songs. I think like top three songs. So the reason why I decided to call it Withholding Nothing is because I think that it's important to also have like deeper level conversations. Like I think it's good, you know, for people to speak about business and about like general life and stuff like that, but I think it's good to actually get to know somebody.
Yeah, 100.
So, and I think Withholding Nothing, the message behind that from a Christian perspective, it's just kind of you surrender everything and you just kind of let things go. But I think with Withholding Nothing, it's about being vulnerable and about like opening up on stuff like that. And yeah, I feel like people just need to have these kind of conversations, because there's loads of podcasts out there that talk about very like surface level things and like ask for very, very like stupid questions, like you should pay on the first date, 100 men, one gorilla, like, you know, those kind of things. And I feel like there's more to life than that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So these are going to be a few deeper questions, and we're going to both answer those questions, honestly.
Cool.
So we'll start off light. We won't go too deep. So what's one memory that you have last year that you won't forget?
Oh, wait. Last year. 2024.
What's like a memory where you're like, okay, whether it be a good memory or a bad memory, but you just won't forget it?
Won't forget. Oh, that's a good question. 2024. What happened in 2024? Constantly the friend.
What else?
I'm trying to think of like.
No, you can take your time,
best,
bro.
The best.
You can take it then.
Or the most interesting thing memory. Coming back to uni. Oh, my apologies.
Oh, no, no. I was going to say I'll start just to give him time, but I thought of one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought of one.
Okay, go ahead, bro.
Coming back from my placement year. So, did my placement year 2023, October, September 2023 till August 2024. Finished my placement year August. Gone back to uni in September for final year. And then going back to uni, sitting in one lecture, and then like almost crashing out in the lecture. I just couldn't hack it. So, I left the lecture.
Yeah.
Now, I deeped in the lecture, I looked around, I'm sitting next to my cousin,
yeah.
And I'm like, I cannot do this. Mm-hmm. Like, going back to uni, I've never been like a, like, actually locking in of education. Put me in the workforce, and I'll thrive, and I'll do my thing, but, like, sitting in the classroom, I don't have the attention span to, like, listen to a lecture and stuff like that, and look at a whiteboard or a presentation for an hour, 2 hours, or however long the lecture or seminar might be, type thing. And I was like, it felt like I just couldn't. I was like, at that point, I wanted to drop out at uni multiple times, but at that point, I was like, but luckily, everyone around me, I knew I was going to drop out, but I just felt like that in my head, even though I knew I was, what, 4 years deep, 3 years something deep into my uni course, everything like that. But going back, there was an adjustment. It was like an imposter syndrome of surrounded by everyone that was younger in my year. And then I just felt out of place. Like, I felt like everyone else is there asking like mad questions. It felt like I didn't know a thing of what was going on. And if I stayed there, I'd have just broken down, type thing. So I literally took myself out of the lecture, left my books. I think I don't even know what I did for the rest of the day. But I actually did a break from uni. Because I couldn't hack it at that point. I was done.
Yeah.
I was completely done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and uni's a struggle.
It's not easy. So shout out everyone that actually goes to uni and perceives that, because don't let anyone underestimate you. Tell uni's a breeze.
Nah, they're lying.
It's cat. Lying. Straight cat.
I think as well, my most memorable moment in 2024 was definitely my dissertation.
Mm.
Are you doing a dissertation, by the way?
Thank God I'm
not. Bro, that dissertation. So the reason why it was memorable, because so basically before you actually start writing your dissertation, you need to create a proposal.
Mm.
So you start writing a bit of a draft, basically. So this is the topic that you want to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, I studied law at university, by the way.
No joke.
So you have to like draft a proposal, write a question, do bullet points and stuff like that.
Oh, right.
So I handed in my proposal and I got my results back in January.
Mm.
So I wrote the proposal in like 2023. So that must have been like November, December time. Got my result in January. The feedback from the supervisor was, you can't talk about this topic. There's not enough like content. The notes were basically saying there's not enough content to write about. So just pick another topic or like rephrase the question. So I was like, okay, let me change the topic a bit. So I changed it to more, it was more of a family law question. And after I got my proposal back, we got allocated supervisors.
Mm.
So I didn't really know the supervisors like that, but I just kind of was like, okay, you know, pick a random supervisor. It can't be that hard, just like pick up a random person. But she was the crappiest supervisor. She was crap. Like, I would hand in like my first draft of my dissertation, like, you know, like a chapter or something. She wouldn't read it.
Damn.
Like, she wouldn't read it, and she would, like, she made some excuse as to why she couldn't do it and stuff like that, why she couldn't mark it. And this time, like, people starting to, like, so this was, like, January, February time. Mm. So people were starting to, like, you know, fully get chapter one done, chapter two done, like, you know, starting to really get through their dissertation.
Mm.
But my supervisor just wasn't cooperating. So then I was like, I'm screwed, because how can I get good at my dissertation?
Yeah.
My dissertation flipping supervisor won't even read my dissertation. Do you know what I mean? But by the grace of God, I got, so she left the university.
First,
if she didn't leave that university,
would have been a long day.
I would have failed my dissertation. I wouldn't have failed, but I wouldn't have got as good as I did. So changed supervisor, and he was like the best. He was like a saving grace for me. So he literally helped me through it and kind of like picked up the pieces where I left off and stuff. And he was really, really helpful. And then at the end, I got a 75% in my dissertation. Cool. And I was like, God, congrats. Shout out to you. So that's something quite memorable for me.
Yeah, actually.
But yeah, next question. So we're going to get a bit deeper. When was the last time you cried?
Last time I cried, I was in church. It was like a month and a bit ago. It was when one of these Sundays I came back from uni, came back home from uni for the weekend, came home Saturday, was in church on the Sunday, left Sunday night. Yeah, just broke down, completely broke down. I was like, damn, yeah, broke down.
When did you say this was?
I think it was April sometime during April, broke down during praise and worship. It was one of the ones just needed. It was so soothing, and it was like tears, not relief. I don't know how to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Not joy. It was just a release I needed. It was more than needed type thing.
Are you talking about like proper crying? Or are we talking about where you start tearing up?
Tearing up, I could say, like last night when the AC got too much, the water started coming out of my eye. I could say, right, and now my eye drops on and tears started forming. Like actual crying.
Maybe 2 years ago. Maybe 2 years ago. And I think at that time, I was kind of struggling with my relationship with God. I was very like on and off with God. Like I'd be like so committed, and then at some point I'd be like, nah, I ain't even praying. I was like, I can't even bother. So I was like very on and off with God. But you see, like, I think I got like a very strong conviction from God that day, because I wanted to speak to my friend on FaceTime. Mm-hmm. Because like for me, when I don't want to think about life, I'll just speak to my friends over the phone. I kind of like
stressy. You don't have to think about it at all.
Because I used to be on the phone to my friends for like hours on end, sometimes like even 4 hours on FaceTime. Madness. With my friends, because I'm like, I don't want to think about life, so I'd rather just speak with my friends and just like get my mind off it. But I remember one time I was just like chilling in my bed, and then my friends were picking up because they were probably busy and stuff like that. And I just remember like I just got this strong conviction, and I think I just started breaking up. Like one of those ones where you feel like so bad that like all you can do is cry. But if we're talking about like tearing up, like I got emotional, I think the day before yesterday, the 1st of May, and I was like, I'm actually turning 22. Like it's mad, like life just goes like quick. So fast. Like, yeah, 22 years, it's not a joke. So, and I feel like I was getting annoyed because I was like, I don't think I'm where I want to be in life right now.
There's so much pressure.
There's the amount of pressure that society, our parents put on us is insane. Pressure after pressure. And I felt like I wasn't living up to those standards. And then I've got my relationship with God that I'm trying to keep up as well. It's like, how am I supposed to balance everything at once? I'm working 40 hours a week. I'm also trying to go to the gym, but I'm also trying to, you know, build something for myself. It's a lot of pressure. So I think I just kind of buckled a bit. Next question. So here's one. When do you think you were at your lowest? Like if you could pinpoint a time where you think, nah, that moment in time, trenches, hell. I'll go first to let you think about
it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Stuff.
That's a deep question.
Yeah, I'm going to give you time to think about that. My lowest moment, probably in high school, my lowest moment. I remember like in high school, I just kind of felt like, you know, when you have those thoughts where it's like you don't even feel anything anymore, like you feel numb kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't feeling like proper sad or anything like that. I was just like, I don't feel anything. I just feel numb. Like I don't feel sad. I'm not going to start crying. Just no emotion. I don't know. It's hard to describe it. It's like you just don't feel any emotion, and you just kind of feel
existent.
Like what you're just are you existing. Doing? Like, what am I really doing?
Yeah.
But I was young at the time, so I think, like, you know, when you're in school, like, you just get caught up in, like, school dramas and school, like, academics and stuff like that. You know, I feel like this year has been like quite smooth sailing.
Cool.
So yeah, but do you have like a lowest?
A one or two. That time in uni. The lowest. I have low. Like I have a few low moments. Like placement got rough.
You even say what you study at uni?
Oh, economics and management. So econ and management. Luckily, it's less the econ side, but like econ because it has the management side. So it has like business modules. I have like marketing innovation modules that make it somewhat interesting and everything like that. Econ in A level compared to economics in uni. Two different things, two completely different things. But lowest moment, maybe that time in uni, you know, because that time in uni, in that lecture, and like looking around, and even looking at my cousin, I didn't. Did I tell her this? I think I might have told her this. And I was like to her, like, what is? I was like, what is going on? Type thing. Like, I don't even know if I want to do this. This, that, and the other. Like looking around, come back from my placement year. Everyone's saying, "Oh yeah, you did your placement. Congratulations, right, tear." But me and myself, it doesn't feel like any of that. So like, I can block out outside noise like quite easily. So even though someone may say to me, "Oh, yeah, well done for having your brand stand the other, well done for doing this," like, it looks like you're doing well. In my mind, I think the complete opposite. Like, yeah, I'm grateful. I'm not ungrateful to be where I am and be doing what I'm doing, but I'm like. The way I see it and the way I want it, where I want to take it and where I feel like I should be at and stuff like that is nowhere compared to like where people see it type thing. So it's like, yes, I'd be saying thank you and this, that, and the other, but in my head I'm thinking something completely else. So even when people are telling me, oh, but uni's almost over, you've only got 7, 6 months left, this, that, and the other, and then you're done for good, all of this, like in my brain. I'm not thinking the opposite. I'm like, I'm ready to crash out. Like, I'm like, you're not in my shoes. You're not in my position. You weren't doing the specific type of 9 to 5 in the company I was doing it with, the people I was doing it with. And then you didn't have to transition back to uni. And then some of these people telling me were like older people. So it's like their generation is different to our generation. Like, I'm not
100%.
saying certain stuff is not transferable and applicable throughout generations, but it's like, it doesn't make sense type thing. And then it's like certain stuff that I want to do with the brand, it was like I restricted myself to do just in general as a whole of where I wanted to be was not at all where I wanted to be. And that was like a low because I kept on hearing, as I learned the hard way, like actually like listen to. There's not gonna be any like thunderstorms to hear from God and stuff like that. Some of
No,
the smallest,
I wish,
finest
man.
things. But I kept on hearing, rest. Like it's not by force 24/7 on goal. It's not by force to stand up. Not everything you have to say yes to. Some things decline. Like learning how not to say yes and learning how to say no is a skill that like requires mastery and like refining and everything like that. And because I don't see myself as doing a lot, but from the outside looking in, I like switching my perspective, like looking in. I've been doing this for so not so long, but I've been doing this for a while that it's just normal to me. So I don't see it as thing, but certain times my body will be telling me like you need to
Slow
rest.
down,
Because like the other day I got ill, and people were like to me, "You're not ill because I don't get ill," but they're like, "You're ill because
You're doing
your
too
body is
much.
telling you that you need to shut down and just rest, like stop, relax, and just let your body breathe type thing." So that was, I would say, when I was at a low, and then because everything around me was just telling me, people kept telling me that nah, I need to rest, different sermons, rest, like just to recover, like just chill, and then learned the hard way, rested, and then yeah,
Back to his prime.
got there in the end.
Thank you for sharing that, bro. I
Of
appreciate
course.
it. But well, it's all right, we're gonna move on from that. But I do feel like that segment is important. It's about
100%.
like those deep conversations. And I feel
Definitely.
like with men, sometimes we don't talk about feelings and emotions and stuff.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's good to like let it out. Because sometimes like when you do talk about it, you feel a lot better.
Definitely.
And I think it encourages other people to do the same and to see that they're not alone as well. So going to move on to the last segment before we close the podcast. So this is another part of the podcast, and I've decided to call it Top of the Class. So if you ever grew up in like an African household, I don't know if it's just my parents, but my dad, when I was your age, I was top of my class. I was getting, he said he was getting like A's in his equivalent to A's and stuff, like 80%, 90%, whatever. And then I realized, I was like, everybody's dad is saying that they're top of the class. You know what I mean? I
was he was really the top of the class,
you know what I mean? Because you all can't have been top of the class, you know what I mean? They're just chatting. But yeah, so I thought this would be like a cool little fun game, just to answer some general knowledge kind of questions, just to lighten up the mood a bit.
Therefore.
Right, so I've got about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 questions. And just let's see if you can answer them. They're not too difficult. Hopefully. So, yeah, so start off. What is the capital of Nigeria?
Abuja.
Yeah.
Everyone gets duped into saying that.
Yeah. Because Lagos used to be the capital city of Nigeria until 1992, and then it moved to Abuja. Did you know that? You didn't know that. What year was the first Air Force One released?
2000 and...
I'm not even going to give anything away. I'm just going to let him speak.
2007.
Do you think that the Nike Air Force One was first released in 2007?
No, I'm saying 07 because of the level one 07.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that. But yeah, I'm going to...
Final answer?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's incorrect.
I thought so.
First released in 1982.
Oh, mad.
Which is mad.
Crazy.
Because I would think the same thing like 2000s, but nah, 1982. So what is the biggest city in the world?
City,
not country, city in the world.
I took a random swing at this. Like New Delhi or Shanghai. I can't guess T. It's one that
I guess T.
Actually, nah, Moscow.
Moscow.
I go Moscow.
In Russia?
Yeah.
Final answer?
Yeah.
Incorrect. Damn. It's actually Tokyo in Japan.
Oh man.
37 million people.
Cool.
That's insane.
Tokyo,
yeah, Japan. I think second place was like New Delhi in India. Yeah, so
yeah. Some place like densely populated and stuff like that from geography.
Geography? Nah, I hated geography.
That was not my subject whatsoever.
Anyone who likes geography, set yourself up.
Sick.
When did World War One start and end?
1914 to 1918.
Yes,
well, that's stuff I remember.
What year did the first black president officially get inaugurated?
So zero.
Take a guess. Take a wild guess.
First black.
You know who that is, right? He's the first black president.
Of US?
Bro, we don't have presidents, isn't it? So, of course, the US, yeah.
Nah. I was thinking of the world. Like,
No. Of United States. My bad, I should have made that clear.
Oh, my bad. Because there's presidents like Zimbabwe and stuff like that.
No. United States of America.
When did he get inaugurated? 20... I don't remember the year, that's the thing. The American election just went. That was 2024. 2020. 2016. 2012?
Can't give an inch, really.
Is that 2012?
2012, final answer?
Yeah.
Incorrect. 2009.
Oh,
that was when Barack Obama was officially inaugurated.
Wait, it's every 4 years. Oh, but the inauguration is how long after the thing? So it would have been... Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah, 2009.
Yeah.
So got a riddle for you as well. So, I have a neck, but no head. I have two arms, but no hands. What am I?
I have a neck.
I have a neck, but no head. I have two arms, but no hands. What am I?
Coat or a jacket.
Which one are you picking?
a coat and a jacket are the same thing, though.
Yeah. A coat. Incorrect. A shirt. So, on the same lines. No, but you're on the same lines, though.
I've been set up. A shirt. Wait, because this is the form of a neck. I was thinking of, I was like, nah, it's not an animal.
No.
and I knew it was a piece of clothing. You know what? Fair enough. It's fair enough.
Half a point. Half a point. What year did Virgil Abloh pass away?
He's been gone for a little while, hasn't he?
2019.
Is that your final answer?
No, 2018. It's final answer. Locked in.
Locked in. Incorrect. Incorrect.
Was it 2019?
2021.
I was thinking 2021, but then I was thinking, hold on. Was it after lockdown?
He's still been here.
Yeah, that's mad. Yeah. So I knew it'd been a second since he died, but I was like, oh damn, that's mad.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, bro. So I don't know how much you got at the end of the round. I have to watch the footage after. So I'm not counting. But
I think we've got like two.
But yeah, so thank you, bro, for coming on to my first ever podcast. I really do appreciate you coming.
Yeah,
thank you. I appreciate it, bro. And yeah, I'll see how this goes. So this might actually never see the light of day. I could look at this podcast and be like, I'm not releasing this. I'm keeping it. Depends on how you're feeling. Like, do you know what I mean? But obviously, by God's grace,
hopefully this sees the light of day.
Hopefully you guys can actually see this. So I'll see how it goes. But yeah, thank you again for coming to my podcast, bro.
Of course.
Appreciate it. And depending on if this sees the light of day or not,
whether you guys sees the light of day,
I'll see you guys in the next episode, or I'll never see you again. We'll see him. But yeah, see you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.